What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I've never been this nervous in my life.
Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. I want to say hello to all of you all who check out the series. I know we put out new interviews a lot, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thank you for subscribing to those of you who do and leaving comments. I always appreciate hearing from you. Really just appreciate you listening. And I'll say, if you're not a subscriber, maybe you'll be inspired by the end of this to do so. Of course, you can grab us at any of the usual spots like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, at YouTube, wherever you get your podcast from. Just type in Kyle Meredith With. You can find us. Hit subscribe. We'll take it from there. We'll deliver them all your way. And I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Gavin Rosdell. I'm once again going to be talking to the Bush frontman about new music. We caught up last year when he released a song called Bullet Holes that was tied to the movie John Wick 3. That song is on the new record, a record called The Kingdom that's going to be out this summer. And we've also heard the first single, the first official single from the record called Flowers on a Grave. So we're going to be getting into what this record is, especially the sounds of it. It's a big, heavy record, as Gavin will tell you, with big, heavy themes. And it's interesting because a lot of this record, of course, was written last year, but a lot of those themes are very present in everyone's life right now in quarantine life. He's talking about loneliness, about searching, about trying to find connection. That's all in this record. So we're definitely going to get into that. And we're going to talk about those singles with Flowers on a Grave and Bullet Holes, and even how it all relates to the political climate. You know, Gavin's never been one to shy away from it. His political writings go all the way back to the 16 Stone record and songs like Bomb and plenty more beyond that. So you sort of get a, you know, know, the updated present version of all of that. We're also going to talk about, you know, he does ballads on every record, at least one or two, never with an acoustic guitar. I don't know why that never occurred to me. I've been a Bush fan since the beginning. But now listening back, I've got to ask him, the ballads on the electric guitar, that's not always the obvious choice for artists. We'll also hear about his relationship with producer Tyler Bates, who he'd hooked up on that John Wick 3 soundtrack. That relationship continues on this record. And Gavin's going to tell us about a live concert DVD that's coming out as well. So let's jump into this, discussing this brand new Bush record, The Kingdom. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell.
Hey, buddy.
So the last time we talked was last year, and you had just released the Bullet Holes single and everything that was tied to John Wick 3. And now you've got the new Bush record that's going to be coming out this summer called The Kingdom. I will have to ask at the beginning here, when we talked last time, you had a completely different title that you were talking about naming this, and back then it was The Mind Plays Tricks on You. What exactly changed, and what spurred this different direction?
Well, the mind always plays tricks on you, right? So that doesn't end. It's just another title. And I took that from a song and record called Undone, and I have that lyric in there. So that lyric is alive and well. And all that happened is I delivered that record, and the last thing was the label wanted me to write two more songs, actually more in line with Bullet Holes, you know? And I was just like, at first, my ego was really, like, dented and annoyed, and I was like, what? I thought this was a perfect record. So I took the opportunity, you know, calling their bluff and, you know, accepting what they said, and just wrote a couple of songs, Flowers on the Grave and this song called The Kingdom. And this, when that word came to me, and it was this, I suddenly thought about what had really been affecting me the most, and I thought about this whole sort of judgmental, self-right society we live in. And The Kingdom was this, like, utopic place that I thought about, where like-minded people who were free of hate, free of racism, free of all the kind of constraints that the terrible people put on us. And that's what The Kingdom is. And then what's even more weird is that then we go into this bizarre lockdown, and our lives are all turned upside down globally, and we all get to realize how fragile we are, and we get to realize all these things that we took for granted, you know, that liberty we took for granted. And so The Kingdom has come to an even more expansive concept, which is this idea, this land of, like, the best part of ourselves, you know. And, you know, aren't we all tired of all the kind of cynical, backstabbing, self-righteous judgment that is hoisted upon everyone every single day? And it impedes people from being their true selves. It impedes people from expressing themselves as they should. And I'm all about self-expression and freedom and those libertarian ideas. So that's what The Kingdom is. So it just fits better. I mean, I still think that the mind plays tricks on you, so it doesn't change my concept, but it just encapsulated it better.
Right.
And that was it. So I just went for it. And it's, well, at the time when I said it was called The Mind Plays Tricks on You, my manager at the time was like, don't give the title away. And I was like, this makes really good. You know, you can't say things enough. But I didn't, did I? I was still like, red herring you, you know?
That was it. That's, you know, it's fine. Do you have a sense, you know, if the things you're talking about, and you've talked about this online quite a bit too, as, you know, we can look at all of this as a moment to reset, you know, to pull back, to mm-hmm. you know, analyze, you know, our lives in that way. Do you have a sense, at least, or maybe I should say a hope, and it sounds like you do, that when this all does play out, and however it's going to play out, hopefully in the most positive way, obviously, that, I mean, what's keeping everybody from just going straight back to what they used to do? You know, is that an easy thing to fall back into? Or do you have a sense that we'll all be changed in a way that, you know, maybe there will be a difference?
I think there'll be some change. You know, most people will in probably, in all honesty, revert back to type and revert back to the same sort of patterns. But I think that for the people that do change, and the people that do suddenly look at, I mean, some now look at, like, things like war or terrorism as they're always intrinsically evil and wrong and mad. And you wonder whether people feel more like that now. You know, you suddenly realize how futile it was. You know, you don't need fighter jets, you need dress braces. You know, you don't need all the money in that. That's what you need.
Right.
And you need to take care of the people that are on the front lines every day. Along with all these terrible suffering from COVID, you know, people are still having heart attacks, people still have cancer, people still need surgery, people still need medical procedures. And, you know, it's just, if you look at it on a microcosm, it's like when you, if you go to the hospital for some terrible reason with someone you love and they need to be sewn back up and, you know, taken care of, and you're through the shock of it, suddenly you're like wandering around going, doctors and nurses are the greatest people ever. But then in your everyday life, when you're like, you know, dealing with your, you know, problems with your spouse or your lover or your job or your co-workers, you're probably not thinking, you don't elevate regular people that make society run in the way that the people do now. So I hope that there's a greater appreciation of that frontline world that somehow can get lost in the melee unless you're unlucky enough to have to deal with them.
It's interesting because, you know, as I mentioned last time we were talking last year, was behind bullet holes. And to an extent, you were talking about this. I mean, you know, a lot of that song sort of put the mirror on our daily lives, especially here in America, you know, as in that first verse and the way it goes, which it's one of those things that, you know, songs can change and can develop their meanings and recontextualize, you know, through history and everything. Yeah. Does that continue on this record thematically, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Yes, I think so. And that's why it was so good to call it The Kingdom, because it went from being a personal statement of how fucked up everyone's minds are and how difficult it is to know your own heart, to let's go for something better. Let's aim for something better. Let's build a bridge to just a like-minded tribe. That's all it is. It's not like I'm not talking about some sort of a built city somewhere. It's just like state of mind. And, you know, everyone should be trying to get better all the time. And everyone should be trying to get smarter. That's the whole point of experience. That's what experience does. That's what time does. It gives you a chance to just reflect on how wrong you've been or how right you've been. And you kind of pursue what was right. And, you know, you try and keep away from what was wrong if you can, you know. A lot of us can't, you know. So we're such fallible beings, you know, human beings. It's fallible, you know, full of strength and weakness and fear and courage, you know, in all equal measure. And they all kind of ricochet around our lives. And, you know, we're the product of people that have shaped us, you know, and our own thoughts as well. It's an incredible time to appreciate the tapestry, the rich tapestry, like the sort of the framework of life and how we all need each other, not just, you know, within a country. I mean, globally and with a global economy. I'm not an economist by any stretch of the imagination, but it is worrying how people are going to survive. And, you know, okay, you shut a shop so no one goes there, but then the people that live there and the family that who depends on that business, what are they supposed to do? And you just realize that we just took so much for granted. I mean, that's got to be the takeaway, that really we just like laid back and someone else thought of the problems to solve, and then we just made our own problems. I got to make some problems today. Cause,
right.
Yeah, so it's just a very deep time for that. You know?
Well, it's also interesting, especially talking about how a song arrives at, you know, the most opportune moment or unfortunate timing. But looking at Flowers on a Grave, speaking about what you're talking about, I've heard you use the word loneliness a lot, you know, and how we're sort of separated in that sort of way. But man, you know, if that's the key inside Flowers on a Grave, that, especially that word right there, loneliness, here we are, you know, when everyone is kind of cut off. What was that feeling from yourself? Where did that come from for you?
My own loneliness. You know, I'm lonely, but I have three amazing boys, and so they really take up a lot of my time. But I mean, I think that society is geared towards loneliness because everyone's striving for so much, and you know, things aren't enough. And if you're with one person, you might want to be with someone else. And if you know, nothing's satisfying, nothing's right, my career's good, but I'm not doing that good, and I want more money, and why am I not being paid, and no one appreciates me. These are common themes that people just feel the whole time and don't, you know, take stock of what they have. You know, we're just, you know, like automatons, you know, get up every day, just try and push further, push through, do better, make more. And this has allowed us time to actually, I mean, certain people, not my case, but other people's case, like get to know the person they're with. Oh, this person I'm with, and they're home all the time. And okay, this is what they are. They bug me. They don't bug me. I bug them. I don't bug them. You know, I'm interested in them. I'm not interested in them. There's always, and you just, I don't know, you get into the heart of the matter. But I always, for me, it's interesting because I always write about these human politics, and that's what I've only ever written about my whole life. And so often that's why I can sing all those songs on different days and have different meanings, because they're all affairs of the heart, of the mind, and of a world of feelings, you know, because in the world of feelings, no right, no wrong, just a world of feelings. And I think they're fascinating, and people are endlessly fascinating with the choices they make, the mistakes that we all make. You know, it's just such an interesting, it's like life is like a one big go-kart ride.
It's a way to put that. Well, it's interesting how you summarize that, you know, and throughout. And I'll take you are quicksand, because, you know, as I've also read, I mean, this is also kind of another version of that, whether it's loneliness or whether it's just a quest into finding that, you know, connection within another person. I don't know if you could speak further on that too, because that's sort of the theme that I understand from it.
Yeah, those themes go throughout everything, because it's what I care about, because I think it's really intriguing. And the most intriguing thing is getting to know yourself. That, to me, is if you get to know yourself, you're the most of use to anybody else. And, you know, a sort of a mottled, misunderstood version of yourself to present to someone else is really almost dangerous. It's almost passive-aggressive, you know. I'm this person. I'm actually not. I'm actually crazy. I stand on my right shoulder the whole time. No, didn't I tell you? I run on my left. And you get to know everyone. You get to know yourself. This is a time for this self-reflection. You know, you see people, there's no time to be bored. You know, there's so much to do and so much to think about that I can't imagine being bored.
I was listening to, you know, the songs that had been released. I was listening to some of the back catalog. And I apologize if this is something that's been talked about in the past, but it dawned on me, as I've loved your music since, you know, I first heard it right there in the mid-90s. But your ballads are always beautiful. They're very, you know, people love them and everything. But it never occurred to me exactly that you do all of your ballads on electric guitar. It's not like you turn around and here's the ballad, now here's the acoustic. You know, some of your greatest slow songs, they're all still plugged in. To a certain degree. Is that always been a conscious choice for you?
Yeah, I'm not a wooden music guy. I've done a little bit of wooden music on these shows, you know, but it always feels like, yeah, I just like the expanse and the sound of electric guitar, and I like the I like what it does against a really plaintive concept, and, you know, pretty melody, and then you have a weirder guitar with it, or arpeggio guitar, you know, something different. I don't necessarily, but then again, I love Neil Young, you know, I love Bob Dylan, mm-hmm. and those guys that are, you know, James Taylor is unbelievable, and that beautiful picking style, that's a, you know, it's a whole world that I haven't really gotten into, but I love it, you know. So yeah, I this one was a really fun one, because there were no ballads on it. My manager was like, you have to do a ballad on one, you know. I was like, all right. So I recorded this song which was undone, and I wrote it on a Sunday and I recorded it on a Monday, and I never done that. And I did try and sing it again to be diligent and to show, you know, good spirit, and like be like, accept that I could do it better, and then I couldn't do it better. So it's a really special song for me, in that it's so fragile, and it's like, it's honesty, it's the emotion of it just came out, recorded the next day. And effectively, when you record the songs, you sort of put them to bed, you know, you kind of bookend them. And it didn't go through any period of metamorphosis of any kind or change. It's just this song that exists. And that's the one with the lyric in it where it says that the mind plays tricks on you. And I liked it so much, that lyric, I said it twice in the song.
Well, you know, the way you've done that, I mean, it's led to these cinematic moments. Even some of those slower songs, you know, whether it's with Cables or 40 Miles, and we talked about both those last time and everything. But it sort of gives it these very pretty moments that are even allowed to be a little weird. And I think that's always been, I love your rockers. I really love it when you get a little weird too, or at least allow yourself that, whatever it is. And it goes back to Greedy Fly. That was a big radio hit, and it was a little weird, you know. And I don't know if you get many of those moments on this record, but I guess I secretly hope for a little bit of that.
Yeah, no, this record is really deep, and like, it's like almost like a record done on baritone guitars. It's very detuned and very, the music's just fat and wide and dark, like the ocean, you know, mysterious.
Some of the cinematic qualities, you had been working with Tyler Bates, of course, on John Wick 3. Did that relationship bleed over into this record? Is he part of this one as well? Because I know there's also another name in there.
Yes, there is. Yeah, Tyler, we did like four songs together. Mm-hmm. And then he gave me a riff, so we did five. Like, I don't think he's heard that song, but we did a riff together. And I just love working with him. You know, we're on the same page musically, and he's a really, really talented guy to work with. And we, you know, we did some songs where he did played the music and I sang on it. Some songs where we where we both played guitars together. And so we got the whole range of it. And I was just really into working with him. I didn't have a studio at the time. I gave up my studio because I thought the record was done. I keep thinking the record's done and it's not done, but now it is done, apparently. and I just, he became a really good friend of mine because we're just really connected, exactly the same age. We live in the same area. He's got an amazing studio. I don't. He's done $5 billion worth of business making movies. I haven't. But, but after that, after the massive success in his studio, we're really similar.
I love what I've heard from that relationship so far. Seriously,
we did a Blood River, this one song, Blood River, and I knew that because I was doing my lyrics first, and I had this song that I wrote about all these words that I wrote about this place in the Highlands in Scotland. This river that is, I guess, stained from the rock, so it's bright red, and they have this amazing. There's this, apparently like a cave there, and they have these steps, and there's this thing called the Devil's Pulpit, they call it. So there's actually a place called the Devil's Pulpit. Now, pulpit is a really hard song word to sing, so I couldn't get the word in there. But I built this lyric, the Devil's Stage. Of course, being in showbiz myself, I called it the stage. Pulpit became the stage, and I wrote this song about that, about Blood River. And when I began working with Tyler, I was like, I got a set of lyrics for you. Because I want to be Bernie Taupin and Elton John, you see?
Right.
I let him be there. I was like, I'll just come in like Bernie, and I just got the lyric. And that is just like such a devastating song. It's so heavy, and it's really, he loved it. It was a funny fit where I just was like, I know what you're going to like. And what I liked about him is that he has this way of working where he faces forward. This is in his studio control room. And I get the sense after we worked with Manson, he was doing a lot of coaxing and talking and chatting, and then he kind of gets the music, where I'm the opposite. I'm like silent. I know he's got no time. I want to go in there and just get stuff done. So he just presses play, and then I just sing. And I know if he doesn't turn around, except at the end of the take, to be like, yeah, I love how that's going, that I know it's going good. My ego's like, don't turn around. It's really good. I got this. And so with that, I was like, he's not turning around on this one because I'm going to just deliver this song. And that was always a gauge of our relationship, whether he turned around to me during the process, because people want direction and an easy life. And so if you're collaborating with someone, nothing better. He plays a guitar part. I go, yeah. If I sing something, he goes, yeah. You don't want to be like, yeah, but could you just like, have you ever thought about it like this? Right. Not. It's just nice when someone just knocks it out of the park and you go, that is fucking great. Thank you. And you just do something with it, And so he really inspired me. And I think that because I'm so fast in the studio, that I inspired him, And he knew that when I come around and work with him, it's a 2-hour window. We're going to have a song, And it's not like, hitting your head against the wall. It's just like, I'm like, no, I'm in it to win it. And I haven't got much time left. I can see the horizon.
Well, you're making big music together. I certainly appreciate that. I'll also quickly mention here, too, that I noticed that you've got a concert coming out on DVD. Looks like a Live in Tampa that's going to be out in April. Is that still the case? Is that still happening?
Yeah, I think so. I just actually did an interview for it. So, yes, I don't know anything about release dates and what's happening. I go, oh, yeah, we did that show in Tampa. I just remember they switched to a bit of a dodgy interview after two songs. I was like, get rid of that. No one wants to hear me talking now. I was just like, keep on the music. So I really hope that they listen to me. They probably don't. But I was like, what is that bit? Like me sort of staged and talking and bullshitting. And I was like, get rid of that. Why is that in this?
That's a different track. You can do that as a different track. It's a special feature if you need it.
It's a spoken word. Well, I do have the stand-up in me somehow because I managed to talk on Instagram Live where I just really riff and talk and just like... just nonstop talking, which is weird because normally conversations are two-way streets.
It's an odd thing to get used to that I've had to as well. It's bizarre. It's definitely bizarre in an audience-less world that we're in right now, seemingly a live audience, obviously. That's the new way of connection right there. Bizarre.
Yeah. It's an exciting time. We just hope that people are suffering. Obviously today we're talking and today is a terrible day in America where the death rate the next 4 days is going to be the highest of all. The whole thing apparently is peaking the next few days. that's just fucking terrible. And all those people suffering, and you know, it's so weird because you kind of get guilty. You know, I get into talking to you, and I'm seduced in the conversation. I'm talking about this, I'm yeah, what am I going live? And I want to wrote that song. And I'm like, wow, there's people like, you know, on respirators who are right. like, you know, right at the end of their journey, and it's just it's horrific, and this hidden enemy. And then you have the madness that's going on. If you switch between, I take breaks during the day. I can't watch the news a lot, but if you go in like I just suddenly go, okay, let's get a beer and watch it. It's like ping pong. It's like slow ping pong.
Oh, right.
It's like watching this. It's so weird. The same day, different perspective, or the same conundrum from seeing from a different side. It's remarkable. And you realize what propaganda we live under. And it's almost like I obviously, you know, being an artist, I think I'm probably more CNN. But even that's getting a little bit too emotive and too centered on the failures of the president. I don't know, it just feels like just the other night, last night I was watching it, and I was just like, wait, is this getting too much now?
This sounds like a very big record.
Yeah, it is a big record. And I think that it's actually a brilliant time to bring things out. I mean, obviously they're looking at the best way to promote it so people hear about it, but it's a great time to bring out records.
Because it's like, it's I'm in Kentucky, I'm in Louisville.
Wow, you're from Slintville.
Yes, I am from Slintville. For a second I was like, what? No, oh, Slint. Yes, I am from Slintville. I know half of that crew. They're you know, they're monsters. The impact that they've had.
Yes, I played with that drummer for a while. He came and played with me on my side project.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Which project was that?
Institute. He began with Institute.
All right.
And then it didn't ultimately work out. I sort of always wondered about it. What a great drummer. I love that band so much.
Yeah.
So whenever I was in Louisville, I was always like, this is royalty. Did people know what's happening in this third place?
Yeah. Okay. I will let you go, man.
Great note to end on.
All right, buddy. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you around.
Okay, take care.
All right, take care, man. Bye. My thanks, Gavin Rosdell. Again, the new Bush record is called The Kingdom, and it will be out this summer. Of course, since we're here, and since I've already referenced the previous interview with Gavin from 2019, I'm going to go ahead and re-include that interview here for you hardcore fans, or some of you that just want to continue hearing about what this record's all about. So again, this is where Gavin and I, we catch up about teaming up with Keanu Reeves and the John Wick 3 soundtrack, especially how that lead single Bullet Holes traces back to 16 Stone's The Bomb and Testosterone. And speaking of 16 Stone, this is when we also talk about the 25th anniversary that happened of that record. It's when Bush opened up for David Bowie while Gavin was on stage every night singing about the Thin White Duke and the song Everything Zen. We'll also dive into the 20th anniversary of the Science of Things album and lots more. It's part two of Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Dude, I love this new song, Bullet Holes. Congratulations on this one. It's such a powerful song.
Nice.
So I know this is part of the John Wick soundtrack, and there's a few tracks. Of course, this isn't the first time you and Keanu have been associated with each other, having been in Constantine together. Have you kept up a friendship this whole time, or is this something kind of rekindled?
Something rekindled. I haven't seen him. It's one of those situations of, you know, having worked together and spent a lot of time. It's just great to see him. And what's weird is that Chad, the director, he directed the stunts for us in Constantine. So the three of us has worked together before. So that's why it was a nice synchronicity, a nice kind of return.
I'm really interested to see that, you know, the chemistry of the three of you all associated with each other again. I know it's not really screen time for you this time, but...
My main job, my day job.
Right. And Tyler Bates is the other half of this equation. So it's you all. Did you write the songs together, or is he just producing?
We wrote four songs together, and I went with him to originally just to write for movies. And then we kind of got along so well that we just kind of morphed into just doing the Bush record. And so we wrote four songs, and I wrote 14 on my own. So it's really nice balance.
Now, is it four songs that actually make the soundtrack, or is it just Bullet Holes?
Well, four songs including Bullet Holes, and four songs for the album.
You know, this track, and I said it was a powerful song, it seems to be one of those that takes, you know, two different meanings. I mean, there maybe is an action movie, you know, slant to it that works, but you're also tackling big issues again in this, right? I mean, you throw in the lines, you know, race wars, planet wars, Star Wars. I mean, it is something more than just...
Mind wars.
Yeah, something more than just a fight 'em.
Yeah, it wasn't written for the movie. It just had nice synchronicity that it worked together. But so, you know, it is a big song. On the highway walking across America, sweat stain in my blue suede shoes. You know, it's an intriguing time to be in America
and experiencing the political climate and the, you know, every day is something insane going on, you know, women's rights, women's bodies, race wars, killings, political unrest. It's a ripe time. I suppose there's always a ripe time, but it just feels so ambivalent and just, you know, it's just really hard to find your footing, you know?
So when you're writing a song like this, I mean, how difficult is it to find the balance of tackling subjects like that, but also, you know, trying to write a good rock song?
I think it's to do with not being like trying to be didactic, you know, not trying to say anything, not trying to come with any solutions, not come with anything like that. You know, it's much more a sense of raising the conversation and raising concerns about things, and that becomes therefore a commentary on things. I mean, I don't think it's right to have political edges and with solutions in there. Then it just becomes like diatribe and sort of manifestos and things like that, which I think is too dogmatic. And I think that it's just a case of finding a way to be mindful and sort of sensitive and open to things, and then clearly being on the side of logic and kindness for minorities, races, predicaments, people, you know, as opposed to sort of whitewash things to just fit your own agenda and be selfish and sort of myopic and things like that. So that's one of the benefits of being in a band. That's how it can be done, I believe. I certainly don't come with them, you know, with answers, because there are so many different answers, but this is a weird time, don't you think?
Yeah, it's absolutely. But it's also not the first time that you have tackled, you know, subjects like this. And I do want to tie in, because I know, you know, two of your older records are celebrating big anniversaries this year with 16 Stone and The Signs of Things. But, you know, even going back to 16 Stone, like I went and revisited Testosterone, which, you know, in the age where we're also talking about a lot of the things that you've just mentioned, but also, you know, toxic masculinity. I mean, that goes right back to what you were thinking about in 94, or so it seems.
And same with Bomb as well. Bomb is the story about the IRA. You know, growing up in where I grew up in North London, you have the Orange Day Parade, the Protestants, and you have the IRA, and you have the pubs you'd go to, IRA pubs, Protestant pubs. So I grew up with all of that. We grew up literally in the 70s as kids with bombings, and so in London. So that was a completely politicized song written in the vein of somebody goes out shopping and then never comes home. So it's like, again, not kind of coming in with criticisms of either side, just a sort of a more of a like, wow, look what the human toll. So yeah, this, of course, this is all the way through. This Is War, the last song off the last record, was completely inspired by Charlottesville and that sort of that whole racial tension there, resulting in the death of one of the bystanders. So yeah, across the board, I think that I've always tried to have a little piece of that, but again, being really careful to not have that be the guiding light. Just within that, you know, within a conversation, within a dinner, within a night, you know, you're going to bring that up to someone, and then you're going to talk about bullshit, and then you're going to talk about other things, and then you're going to talk about personal things. So it just is a whole, just part of a sort of, I don't know, being awake.
You don't really think of Bush as a political band, maybe in the way you would think of what Tom Morello does or something like that. But it is there. I mean, and obviously, you know, there are other sides to it, as you've also said. But
that's exactly what I'm saying, and I really like it. I think that if you have it where the trouble is, if you're totally only that one way, you kind of also change it. I mean, I do have, I think politics of the heart and politics of the mind are far more interesting and far more long-lasting and longer-reaching than the writing songs about political climates, just because they're so hard to just not become across like an asshole, basically. You know, so you don't want to be an ass. You sort of like want to be like, I'm not so dumb that I don't think about these things, but it's not what I think about all the time. And also, do want a degree of escape in music. And I think that if we had done it where we had been over-politicized, like a Manic Street Preachers, for instance, you know, they never had a song about love in them. But then Motorcycle Emptiness was their prettiest song because it had the kind of mournful lilt and, you know, even though it's sort of about existentialism, it's a sort of had a nice feel to it. So I just think I'm greedy, you know what I mean? I want it all.
I know a lot of concentration is going on 16 Stones since 25 years, but I did want to bring up The Signs of Things, which is a record that meant so much to me and was so different sounding when it came out in 99. because it sounded like the future. You know, when I first heard that, I mean, that was the sound of the future. And I know you had just come off the Remix album. Was that part of the how that record came to sound the way it did?
I mean, it just was, it was weird because having done Razor Blade with Steve Albini, I felt there was something about, like, I'd betrayed. I wasn't giving anything of England, of our whole history growing up and the kind of, you know, the dance world or the kind of programming world. And, you know, I came up through dance hall and, you know, sound systems. They were the backdrop for so much of my youth, you know. And it was always like, cool, it's being really kind of heavy rock and doing a super heavy record and this and that. And I was like, I just fancied doing, I don't know, just giving a little bit more to London in there for whatever. It just felt like the right time. Maybe we'd been so long on the road and was like, you know, this America band's great. Like, hang on, you know, like, we're English. So I wanted to do this hybrid where half the record was, like, not programmed, but then some of it, a lot of it was, and so that's what it was.
Even the ballads, I mean, end up having the programming in. I mean, 40 Miles from the Sun, it's so hypnotizing and letting the cable sleep, but there's a lot of stuff kind of happening, you know, in the background when you put the headphones on. It's mesmerizing, those two songs.
Yeah, thank you. I love those, you know. I was listening to that the other day. But yeah, I think I'm really proud of that record, and, you know, it's weird because we keep doing these like this tour with Live, which I'm happy to do with the other two guys. I mean, your set's so much shorter. It's like a bit of a small festival. They play 70 minutes, and I sort of always wish we could play less of the the traditional songs, so we can go off piste a bit more. But it's just so hard because I don't want people, you know, that thing where you go and see someone, they just like super obscure tracks the whole time. It's just annoying. So it's basically a little longer set.
I was also that was also the last record with Nigel. Was the writing on the wall at that point? I mean, did you know that that was going to be the end of that part of the end of that chapter?
Yeah, I think that he felt really increasingly guilty of being away so much and missed his first child growing up, first 2 years, and just went that, I don't know, probably more traditional, more cliched way. It just takes so much. It really destroys your life to tour for this amount of time, for this kind of veracity, and it really does destroy your life. And I think he just was intrigued in not having a destroyed life. You can do it so it doesn't destroy your life, by the way, and people do that, but I think it certainly took a toll on my life, and I can look at my bass player, Corey, and be like, his life, you know, it's he's got such an amazing wife, and they have such an amazing chemistry and relationship that it just works for them. And then for other people, it's just harder. And that's all that happened with Nigel. And that was it. I think he's actually probably seeing the Strokes that did him in. He saw the Strokes, and when they first came out, was like this perfect band, perfect 21 years old, and the rest of us were just like a waste of space. and that's really, it had a profound effect on them when they when the Strokes first came out. I remember that distinctly. And whilst I understood what he meant, you know, for me, it's much more intriguing to be a working musician than to be a rock star. You know, like, I think that being a working musician sort of gives you you're granted immunity. You know, you can keep traveling. Yeah, you're fine. You know, if you're desperately trying to be a rock star and trying to compete and trying to be, I don't know, as popular as like Drake or something, you know, or like Jay-Z, you know, you're in trouble. You know, but if you're like trying to just play the music that you love to the people that love you, that's okay. You can keep doing it. I'm in the latter, obviously. You know, I'm in the delusional latter.
I do want to ask at least one question about 16 Stone while we have the second, but I didn't know until reading up recently, you know, kind of looking back at that record, a few of the artists, or a few, I don't know, I'll say artists, the importance that they had on you with Bukowski and Ginsberg, and obviously Bowie, who you quote in one of the songs, but and you had toured with him at that point. What was that like? Because if you're using him in the lyrics and around him, there's got to be some level of hero worship to get over at that point.
Well, it's embarrassing. I mean, it's embarrassing because it was like Dave's on sale again. So it's like your sort of slutty side. You know, he had a slutty side, which he prefers to admit. Well, the thing about it is that, yeah, he's one of those rare exalted. I mean, you can meet everyone. I mean, you know, there's, you know, obviously in this world, you meet a lot of people who, you know, have a sort of a profile and they're famous and stuff like that. But he's kind of special, really, isn't he? Sort of in his own world. But, I mean, once you start having a conversation, it's I don't know, sort of over with. I mean, it just really couldn't help. It was always exciting to get an email from him because it is David Bowie, but I don't know. It's just sort of nice to just get past that a little bit, but never lose the respect of, you know, how amazing someone is. And I have lots of people who I think are amazing who aren't like necessarily world famous or world renowned, or sometimes they are, but you just know when you're in the presence of greatness, whether it's they're famous or not, you know?
I never met Bowie, so I don't exactly know, but yeah.
Yeah, well, he was an exalted, he was in slightly, you know, rarefied space, of course. But what's amazing was that in turn made him more, because he has nothing to hide, he has no airs and graces, just fucking, just amazing. Just interesting and amazing and funny, really funny. So basically laughing a lot and like taking the piss out of everything, or having really in-depth, deep conversations about things that this can go anywhere because he's so well-read and erudite, you know what I mean? Just like can go anywhere.
I know that leads to the new record and everything too, and that's coming out later this year. I mean, we've been told it's going to be a heavy record, at least heavier than maybe lately, but you know, aside from the ideas and bullet holes, I mean, what's got your mind right now?
Well, first off, it's really heavy musically, and Bullet Holes is just in the vein. It's not, that's not not an outlier. They all sound like best friends with Bullet Holes. So apart from this one ballad that my manager said you should need to write one ballad, it's like okay. I wrote a ballad on a Sunday, recorded on a Monday, and I love ballads and I love writing them, and I have such sort of a manic depressive side that they're probably the easiest songs for me to write. I have to work hard to speed things up and not be like, oh my god, it's terrible. Oh no, what will we do? Here's a song called Oh No, What We're Gonna Do, What Will We Do Now. So I wrote, of course, Undone, and it was really nice to write and just let it out and just be like, okay, try this. And then I've never written a song on a Sunday and recorded on a Monday. That was like my most compact, really. I love being compact and concise. And then there's too many words, too many songs, too many people, so like be fast at what you do. Do it efficiently.
The economy of words.
The economy of everything. It's beautiful.
I certainly do love the words that you put out there. You've been such an interesting wordsmith to either just enjoy or dissect for the fun of it, you know, and I've always appreciated that side of you. So I'm looking forward to see how this one rolls out as round.
I appreciate that. Well, that's why, you know the album title, right? The Mind Plays Tricks on You.
Did that come from somewhere specifically for you this time then?
That came from the song that popped out. It's from a song called Undone, and it was just a lie there, and I liked it so much in the song I repeated it. I was that impressed with it, I repeated it, and I was like, that could be a good album title, because I've done sort of shorter ones, longer ones, you know, and that's definitely the longest title I've ever had. I don't know, probably be shortened to The Mind, but The Mind Plays Tricks on You, it just sums us all up, doesn't it? Just like, we're just like these positive and negative ions bouncing into each other, trying to be understood, trying to be liked, trying to make our way forward, and usually the biggest enemy is right inside us, like telling us that why we shouldn't be doing what we're doing, or what's wrong with what we've got, you know. And I just think that it's just one of those phrases that it feels really good to say it out loud, because it gives you hope that you can combat it, because you go, I got this, shut up, I got this, stop it, we're fine, stop it, you know. And I think that it's so weird when you look at everyone's not what they say, but you look at everyone's subtext that has that in there. Everybody's subtext has that so deeply in there that you start to forgive a lot of people a lot of things, most people most things, when you think of it, that it's usually from a defensive position, and really unusually from an aggressive position, that it just you go, it's a slight revelation. I just felt like a relief to say it, you know, like, these shoes are too tight, you know. You just say it, and you go, they fucking are, they're just too tight, they look great, they're too tight. Change the shoes.
I mean, it sounds like there's a bit of optimism in everything you just said, and that's nice to hear.
Yeah, there's always hope, you know. Remember, it's only death.
Maybe that's the greatest way to sum this entire thing up right there. I love that. Thank you.
All right.
Gavin, I so appreciate the time you've taken today. I really can't wait to hear the rest of the record. Congrats on that. And
thank you.
And take care, man. We'll see you out on the road.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Bye. And again, Gavin Rosdell, that 2019 interview. Right there around the John Wick 3 soundtrack and the anniversaries for 16 Stone and the Science of Things. And the new Bush record again is called The Kingdom. due out this summer. Pre-orders going on right now. Thanks to Gavin. Thanks to you for listening all the way to the end here. Always appreciate that. Again, if you're not a subscriber, I really do hope, especially since you made it to the end here, that you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the series. You can, you know, keep up with all of your favorite artists. You can discover new artists. You just know what's happening in the music world. It's a great way to do that as well. Find us at any of the places that you like to get podcasts from. That does include iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, even YouTube. If you're over there as well, just type in Kyle Meredith With and hit that subscribe button. And after that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, of music news, of anniversary spins, and bonus interviews as well. Again, that's WFPK.org. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me on most of the social media platforms, at Kyle Meredith. Hope you follow along there as well. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Stars was amazing. And when I took them on tour, I became really good friends with Matt, the singer. And when I first met him, I was like, you did the impossible. You got silence on radio. Because remember that sort of like bit in Stars where there's like at least 5 seconds off. I was like, how did you do that? You're like, you know, you're the advertising executive's nightmare. You know, you can't have silence on the radio.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.